Okay, it's 1:30. So it's time to give a talk, sending people off. So I was thinking, there was a story of a monk who, he was a Vietnamese monk, and he went to teach a, I think it was like a 7-day retreat. And what he did was, before everybody arrived, he went to sit, like, you know where I'm sitting, but this was like in a different place. And he was such a good meditator that he got into a deep meditation. Have you heard this one before? And that for the 7 days, he didn't come out. Can you imagine that? He sat like that for 7 days and he didn't move. He didn't wake up. And I always wanted to know who that monk was. And the person who knows that, who found out about that story is Ajahn Suchato. But I always asked him, but he never told me who it was. I don't know why, but I think they just want to keep these things quiet. Otherwise, this monk would be, you know, quite famous, because people want to know who he is. And basically what happened was he just got into a very deep state of meditation. And you hear these, you know, they're pretty cool stories, actually. And there was another, when I was a younger monk, this other young monk was telling me about this story of a Chinese monk who was walking through the forest. And I don't know, they probably like cooked their own food and stuff like that. He was going on Tudong and he found himself a cave and he set himself up for the night. And, you know, built a fire. And then he was making some sort of soup. Maybe, I don't know, sweet potato soup or something like that. I don't know. Whatever was in that area. So he filled the pot up with water and he started to boil his soup. And then he went and sat in front of the soup, waiting for it to cook. But instead of like getting out of his meditation in time, he got into a deep, deep meditation. And then when he woke up, the pot was dried out. There was no soup left. So that sort of tells you that you sort of get into a place where you're just so, you know, deep, so quiet that you completely forget about time. Well, anyways, it's just a few fun facts for you to think about. And so, you know, this is the last day. You got a few more, you know, after this talk is basically finished, right? So all your stuff is packed. Your cars are ready to go. And it's been a hot couple of days. But luckily, this room is air-conned. And yeah, so whatever you learnt over the last 2 days, you can always take that with you and use it out in the world, back in your lives. And I think always think a nice thing to do is try to continue on with your meditation. And a good thing to do is try to put aside some time, you know, every day. Try to keep it consistent and practice, you know, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. And, you know, that would just see how that goes. And yeah, just 20 minutes of peace a day in the morning and in the evening can help you, you know, relax and just to give you time out from, you know, the busyness that you have throughout your day. So when you're out there, just be Buddhist, I guess. Oh yeah. So you know, with this path of practice, it's not all about the meditation. There's also other stuff that you can think about and contemplate. And basically it's put down, you know, to the threefold path of of being a virtuous person, of meditating, and also, you know, the wisdom, the letting go, the contemplating on how to free yourself from suffering. And Ajahn Chah, he made up a simile that basically said that you need all these three things to you know, basically complete, you know, the practice of Buddhism, and that's sila, samadhi, panya, virtue, meditation, and wisdom. And he compared that to the tripod of a camera. And when you think about a tripod, it has three legs, you know, one leg. So it just holds the camera stable. And it needs those three legs to be able to work properly. And if you take away one of those legs, then you know, the tripod doesn't work. It falls over and the camera gets broken. And in the same way, you know, with this practice of Buddhism, sometimes we just think that it's only like a one-fold path, and all we got to do is meditate and forget about the world. But there's other, you know, other factors which are involved to be able to complete the whole practice. And I think, you know, for people like yourselves, always being in contact with other people, the practice out there is really to be, you know, a virtuous person, and to, you know, to build up that goodness. And in a way, you're building up the foundations for the meditation. So the next time when you do come to a retreat, your mind is, you know, somewhat ready. So when you come and sit down, the mind is quite settled. So it's easier for your mind to become peaceful. And you can notice that. How was your behavior before you started this meditation retreat? And then, you know, you think about it. Were you getting into arguments, or were you being revengeful? Were you drinking a lot, being irresponsible, and you know, coming here? How did that affect your mind? So the next time when you do a meditation retreat, from now on, try to make those changes in your life to be a more kind and compassionate person. And then when you go on your retreat the next time, see how that affects your mind. Does it have a positive effect, or does it have a negative effect? And in the sense, I think, you know, it's generosity is always a nice thing, especially for Westerners, the ability to just give. Like, you know, I like to say that, have one pocket, you have money in one pocket, you have money in the other pocket. The money in one pocket you can use for yourself, and the money in the other pocket you share it with other people. So, you know, with your friends, with the Buddhist Society, there's always, and, you know, if you have time, go visit the monasteries, and just to see how the monastics live their lives. And it's also a great opportunity to give, because as monks, we do live off the generosity of lay people. You know, as monks, we can't cook. That's one of the main things. And we do rely on lay people to bring food to the monastery to feed us. So there's a monk's monastery and there's a nun's monastery. And I think it's a nice, it gives you the opportunity to develop a relationship with the monks. You get to see what they're like. You get to check them out, and you come to a realization that, you know, we're just like normal people. We just got brown robes on. You know, we have our problems, but we're trying. You know, we have the right intentions of putting our efforts into the meditation practice, learning the teachings of the Buddha. And he asked the lay people, what do they get when they come up, when they go to the monastery to feed the monks. And they say, look, they get happiness because they're giving with a whole heart, with kindness. And also they get the opportunity to hang around or be around good people, like-minded people. You have this lovely group in Dhammaloka Center, and it's basically a group of Thai ladies that stay there for the weekend. And they get together, you know, they chat, they meditate, they cook breakfast for the monks. But when you're around them, you can sense that there's this level of like contentment, a sense of ease. They're happy with their lives. And in a sense, as human beings, we're sort of like searching for that. We're looking for that. And you know, my advice is to just try and go and, you know, do things differently, check things out, and participate. Participate and see if you can help out, you know, the center in Dhammaloka. The nuns' monasteries, they have busy bees as well. You can go there and spend a day. The city center in Nolamara. Yeah. You can go. That's in Gijiganup.
TJ.
TJ, yeah. There's a nuns' monastery and there's a monks' monastery. And also, if you wanna dedicate more time to the meditation practice, you can always join the monastery and spend a few days there. There's rooms for females and males. And you can just go online and book in. And that's another way for you to further develop your practice of meditation. You can stay here as well, but it costs money. But in the monks' monastery, you can stay there, and it's free. And nuns' monastery as well. Yeah, so there's opportunities out there to be more involved with the Buddhist community and just, you know, just being around like-minded people. It's always, I think, a helpful thing, a positive thing. You know, the Buddha called it, you know, Kalyana Mittas, you know, friends on the path. And the Buddha actually said it's a very important thing. So,
Dhammaloka, they can follow up with the meditation class every Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
3 to 4.
There's, yeah.
The Nolamara Center. 3 to 4. Yes.
Yeah, 3 to 4. And also the monastery is just down the road and the gates are open. So when you leave this place, before just going down to the highway, you can just turn left and go into the monastery and have a look. Go into the Dhamma Hall, check it out. There's the kitchen area. It's quite simple, actually. And yeah, so you know that you can do these things. You can explore the world of Buddhism and just see where it takes you. But, being here over the last couple of days, you hopefully develop some peace, some stillness, you know, some you know, strength of mind, and that is also very helpful when you go live out in the world. It is you sort of like, you know, if you become like a calm person, you know, a person who has like some inner strength, a person who is, you know, peaceful. I mean, life becomes a lot easier to live when, you know, things, you know, when people say something which can be annoying, because I know you learn how to let go. When people say it, it may, you know, hit you, but then you're able to let it go. You don't hold on to it, and that's one of the benefits that comes from this meditation practice. Because it is, you know, a path of letting go, of throwing things away. You do that by sitting down with your eyes closed, and then you do that by living out in the world. And the meditation helps you react differently towards the world, and having, and just being able to, you know, make peace with whatever, what, you know, people say to you, or whatever situation that you put yourself in. And this sense of, like, this sense of calm and peace that you develop over time, it's like a, it helps you overcome your fears, and it gives you like a confidence to be able to do things. You know, when I was, you know, a young monk, you know, you have these fears that arises, and it's a silly fear, but I was afraid of heights. I never wanted to climb up on ladders to go up on the roofs, you know, to fix the gutters or something like that. And then when Ajahn Bhavani asked me, oh, do you want to go clean the gutters? I would tell him, no, I don't want to clean the gutters. I'm afraid of heights. And that's when I was a young monk. And then over the years, just meditating and developing a sense of, you know, peace, a sense of calm. This sense of peace and calm is sort of like, how would you say? It's sort of like takes over the mind. And then when it comes to do things that would scare you in the past, it doesn't scare you anymore. It may scare you a little bit, but because that, you know, that calm and peace that you've developed, that's more prominent in the mind. And I sort of like to explain it in a way where, you know, your mind is, you know, so big, and there's just so many, and there's just so much you can fit into it. And say, if you have your mind, there's a lot of fear in there, then that overtakes your mind, and that's how you live your life. But over time, when you meditate, and when you develop calm, you know, this ability to just not be afraid in situations where you used to be afraid of. And what this happens is the calm grows, and it sort of like becomes bigger in your mind, and it grows and grows and grows, and it basically pushes, you know, those fears away, or the anxiety or the unhappiness, and the calm just grows and grows and gets bigger and bigger. And in a sense, when you think about how to let go of these defilements, that's how it happens. Is one thing grows and the other thing just disappears. And, you know, Ajahn Brahm always likes to talk about the simile of the garden, and it's basically talking about the same thing. You know, there's two types of gardeners out there. There's the gardener who works really hard to keep their gardens looking nice, and there's the Buddhist gardener who is wise, who is lazy but wise. Yes. And so the gardener who works really hard, he or she wakes up every morning, goes out into the garden and starts pulling out the weed, and then goes back to the porch, sits down, and it's still, and the day gets hotter, it's, you know, 37 degree day, is really hot, like how it is outside now. And they see another weed and they get up and they pull it out. And what is happening is they're just struggling and giving themselves putting themselves through a hard time by trying to keep their gardens looking nice. Yes, it may work, but it takes a lot of work. So the Buddhist gardener, who is lazy but wise, what he does is he plants the things that he likes, like he plants his roses or, you know, whatever else they like. And he waters and he fertilizes the plants, but with the weeds, he just leaves them alone. They can grow if they want. They can take over the garden. He's not worried about it. Or she's not worried about it. But what happens is over time, when the gardener or the just focuses on the plants that he likes, that's the plants that keep him growing. And the weeds, they may still be there, but you can't see them anymore because, you know, the flowers, the roses, they have basically overgrown the garden. And in the same way, sometimes we think that we have to work really hard by fixing ourselves, you know, fixing our neurosis, fixing our problems. But sometimes sometimes you can do things differently, look at it from a different angle, and trying to work on the, you know, on the positive side of the mind, like calm, peace, you know, tolerance, being more patient at work, not complaining so much. And a lot of people complain. I think it's just a part of human nature. We just like complaining. We get off on complaining. But in the sense, I complain as well. I complain as well, but I think it's fine to complain, but just don't complain too much. You know what I mean? Don't be a complainer. So when people see you, they just think, oh, here comes the complainer, the fault finder. I just don't want to be around him. Sometimes, as humans, we just have to complain to let off some steam. Find a good friend and just talk to them. Just let go of that steam. And that is, you know, helpful as well. We don't have to keep everything in. Otherwise, we might develop cancers and things like that. It's not good for our health. It's, you know, the benefits of this practice is basically what happens is you start to develop a healthy mind. Yeah, you can understand what an unhealthy mind is. You can understand what an unhealthy body is and what a fit body is. And when you look at our bodies, if it's weak, the immune system is not strong. If we get a cold or we get a tummy flu because our immune systems aren't strong, the flu, it just hangs around. It doesn't go. You wait, 1 week, 2 weeks, the flu is still there. And it's all, and the reason is because our bodies aren't strong. But if we had a healthy body, you know, we eat well, we exercise, then when we get a cold, it doesn't last that long. Maybe a week, and then it disappears. You don't need to go to the doctor to get antibiotics. And that's the nature of the body, and that's how it works. And in the same way, I think the same thing happens with our minds. If our minds are unhealthy, in a sense, when we get a little bit of depression, when we get irritated, when we, when there's problems arising within our minds, because it's a mind which isn't healthy, it takes a long time for us to process it. It takes a long time for us to let it go. But if we have a mind which is healthy, a healthy mind, then the problems that we come across in life, yeah, they may ruin your day or parts of your day, but you get over it quite quickly. You can forget about it and just move on with your life. So coming here, learning the teachings, it's here to help you develop that healthy mind. And it's, healthy mind is, what is a healthy mind? You got to put fertilizer in it? I don't know. A healthy mind is quite simply a mind which is, like I've been saying, or a retreat. Calm. Healthy mind is calm, it's still, it's peaceful. It has clarity, it's energetic. That's a healthy mind. You can see with Ajahn Brahm, you can say that his mind is very healthy. He's a monk that is so busy. He's the busiest monk I've ever seen. It's crazy how busy he is. He's teaching overseas, and when he's back in Perth, he's going to Nala Mara. And if he's not in Nala Mara, he's in Jhana Grove working on the computer. And when he's not doing that, he's probably in his office in the monastery doing something. He's got to deal with the committee. He's got to deal with the monks. He's got to deal with the lay people. You know, there's so much, there's so many things to just trigger, like a lot of negativity and you know, anger or anything like that within his mind. But he seems to be able to, you know, be resilient and be able to just deal with it and be quite peaceful doing it. And it, you know, it makes me think, you know, how does he do it? It's because, you know, he's put time into the practice. He's meditated a lot. He's been a good monk. He's been very giving. You know, these are examples that we can just look at and just follow and just see how, yeah?
Does that mean that he meditates every day still?
I think when he has time, he meditates, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
But does he go through a period of time where he doesn't meditate?
I think sometimes he doesn't because he's just so busy.
Way out. Like,
oh. No. He did a lot of the work when he was a younger monk. Yeah, he did a lot of the meditation and
he
got the insight.
When he goes to his lectures and he puts his energy, puts it, it does work. I mean, if he's not doing it regularly, like hours a day, where does that energy come from? He puts into us because it does. But I believe that it does work with the certain monks and whatever, their energy gets transported into
the body. Yeah, you could say, like I like to say, like the practice of Buddhism is it's like you're transforming your mind or transforming your being to one thing to another. But it takes years to become something completely different. So your mind, you know, it's more present, it's more focused, it's more clear. It sees the world as it is, it can solve problems and things like that. So it gets to the point where, you know, just living a life is like meditating for him. He's
so
like
that calmness and all that in his mind, that holds the energy in which then he gets to give to you.
Yeah. Anywho. And it was also nice to see that he, when he came back from his trip overseas, he was able to take some time off and give himself a retreat. Yeah. And it's also nice for you people when you're out there, you know, you're working hard, you're busy, and just sometimes just give yourself some time out. You know, on your weekends, they're always free. And maybe just dedicate some, you know, parts of your day to the meditation practice. You know, change things up. Try something different. And yeah. So yeah, I was going to say something else, but I can't remember.
How was it for you, your first time?
First time. Oh, my first time. Well, I guess it's okay. Huh? What's that? Huh?
Yeah, got
to watch it. You laugh, you shouldn't laugh.
You started.
So I guess it's okay.
This is
my first retreat, yeah. Yeah. So I'm just getting to learn how to give talks, basically.
Do you actually build this stuff yourself? I thought you'd maybe do some door later too, no?
Oh, we did a bit, I did a bit of work here. Yeah. I helped lay the floor, yeah. Yeah. I didn't put the roof on. No. Health and safety regulations. I wasn't able to get up there. So yeah. No, it was actually quite easy. They just, all those panels were actually glued. They just went up there with a machine and just glued it up there. So one day they might start falling down.
What's the take on monks being photographed?
Oh, it's okay. You can take photographs of monks.
Okay. Yeah. It's just that when you two were both meditating, it was so gorgeous, and it's like you can't get that. Like,
okay.
You
know, yeah.
I'd love to have taken a photograph of it, but it's like without your permission. And also, you know, when you're aware, you don't actually get that same. When you guys are in meditation, do you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
So
yep.
If I go,
will
you just close your eyes and pretend you're meditating? It's not the same.
It's not the same, no. Because we know the camera's there. We know the camera's there. Sorry. Actually, I don't really have anything to talk about. Let me think, huh?
We've got loads.
Yeah, yeah, that was a long time ago.
You don't have a kitchen,
no, that's a long time ago. That was in the past. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Not anymore. Oh, yeah, he still talks about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a long time ago when they had the retreat over the. The Redemptorous Monastery in North Perth, and yeah, it's an old church or something like that. And at that time, Bianca, who is the manager of this place, her husband was dying of cancer, and she was the one that was meant to cook. And so I was at Anagarika at the time, and Ajahn Brahm knew that I used to be a chef. Actually, I'm not a chef. I didn't actually get my papers. I didn't actually get my papers. I did for a few years, but then I'm like, oh, I'm going to become a Buddhist monk, so who really needs the papers anyways? So I was asked to cook, so I just, okay. I'm like, good Anagarika always says okay to the Ajahn. It's like, okay, yes Ajahn. I will go. So I just went there. And for the 9 days, I was just cooking, like, vegetarian food. And people still remember it.
Yes.
And it was like a delicious meal.
Well, how did you do that? We still remember so much food. Where did you get your food shop?
The secret was I called up the restaurants. Oh, hey, just bring me a server of, like, some mushrooms or something like that. And then, you know, being a young Anagarika, you have, like, a lot of cravings and... I just wanted to eat like a burger from Hungry Jack's. So I called up my dad, because my dad was just working down the road, you know, at my grandfather's shop. They have a grocery store. He does deliveries. So he knows where the closest Hungry Jack's is. So like 10:30 or something, kitchen door, I hear a knock, 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 and I open the door, it's my dad. And then my dad hands me over the brown paper bag. And I pull out and then there was Barbara and Ainsley, they were there. And they saw me eat the burger and they said, "You're never going to become a monk."
And how is your relationship with burgers now?
Barbara and Ainsley.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, burgers.
Hungry Jack's.
I'm beyond Hungry Jack's. Actually, huh? Yeah, sometimes people bring Hungry Jack's to the monastery, but...
Some of the new burger places now are
also...
runs up and I'm good to get up.
Hmm.
A few weeks ago, I picked cold burgers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so there were memories of the past.
So how was this retreat in relation to other retreats?
What do you mean?
I mean, like, is this sort of like basically how they pan out, or?
Yeah, as a group. Huh?
As a group, us as a group.
Pan out, what do you mean?
We're just in.
Are we getting too shaky what she meant?
No, I'm just wondering, like, you know, because you must have done other retreats and stuff,
yeah.
And you might not have run them.
Yeah.
So, like, are you pleased with that way at all?
Yeah, I'm pleased, I think. I think it depends on how people feel, I guess, afterwards. If they've got anything out of it, if they developed a little bit of peace, yeah. Because at the end of the day, the teacher can't really do anything for you. You have to do it for yourself. And I think, you know, if you really want to get something out of it, you need to have that. You need to put that effort in. You need to come back to the meditation practice and, you know, see, you know, just give it a chance. And I think it's, you know, it's worthwhile. It does bring, you know, it just brings a lot of peace and clarity to your mind. And, you know, life becomes easier to live. It just becomes a lot easier.
The other day, I wanted to get it out before I forget to tell you, actually, because it was great, when you said about the monk saying, don't worry, laugh.
Yeah, don't worry, laugh.
Because in Liverpool, that's a description that they say, but you said it was from Malaysia.
It's Malaysia. The Malaysians, they like to just add, it's not a word, is it? It's just a sound. A sound like, yeah, don't worry, laugh. Yeah.
I remembered that, and when my leg was hurting, I was just sending, don't worry, it was like, okay, yeah. it was allowing me to sit in a longer thing. So, I got a lot out of the weekend, I don't know anyone else did, but
okay,
I
yeah.
was confronted with myself,
mm-hmm.
You know, with my own ridiculousness, but also in gratitude around, you know, like what the pain was, and instead of being angry and mad at it, it was like, oh no, actually, I get like why it was really important for it to have happened at that point in my life.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, yes, so thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Buddhism is not a very complicated religion. It's something that you can use as a guideline in your lives. And it's just making those little changes to become a better person. And that's all it is, really. And it's a path of, like, you know, you're not putting your beliefs into a god where if you dedicate, you know, your beliefs, you know, then somebody will save you when you die. But it's a path where you see growth happening, you know, through the years that you practice. And the Buddha did give a simile. He did give a simile of of the hammer. It's a hammer. When you get a brand new hammer, you know, it's got clean lines. There's no scratches. It hasn't been used. There's no dents. There's no rust on it. It's a new hammer, but, you know, and then you start using it. And then year after year, you use it. But during the process of using it, you don't really see the wear and tear happening. You don't see the dents. You don't see the scratches. It's only after, you know, 3 or 4 years of using that hammer, you can start actually seeing the wear and tear in it. And the Buddha said in the same way with his practice, you know, the way you want to point your mind, the path that you want to walk, you can't really see the progress happening day by day. But after a few years, when you look back from where you came from, you can start seeing the growth in your practice. You can see that you've become a more calmer person, a more wiser person, you know, a person who can help people because they've been through, you know, the troubles. It's only when you've been through something is when you can really help other people out. And that's why, you know, the monks are here to help you out with your meditation. And for me, you know, that's the one thing that I like doing in the monastery is to meditate. And I don't really like to do any of the other stuff. I like to work, you know, help out, serve the community. But I'm not a monk who likes to read the books, you know. I don't go through the suttas like Ajahn Brahmali does. He's sort of like an expert. He knows a lot. If you ask him to, you ask him, well, what did the Buddha say here? And he'll quote you the sutta and he'll give you the name of it. And you know, but that's his way. That's how he likes to do things. But I live a more simpler life. And you know, you just spend your days in your room and you meditate and you just try to develop your mind. And hopefully one day, things happen. Yeah? You actually get somewhere, and that's when you can really help somebody.
You find your way out.
Yeah, you find your way out, and at the moment it's sort of like, yeah, I'm just like you guys. I'm just been meditating for a little bit longer. And, you know, in a sense, I don't really feel, you know, qualified to teach. Because, honestly, I don't really know. Yeah. All I know is that if you put your butt on the meditation cushion, and you start to sense that you're going in the right direction. And you know, it's not through faith or like a blind belief, but it's through your experience. You know, you can feel like the stillness, and Ajahn Brahm talks about the stillness all the time. And that's all he says, you just got to be still. And then everything happens from there. It's very simple. So I just don't know how to, you know, it's very simple. You can say it in a few words and that's all you need to know. So, you know, as you practice, you can actually feel this and it sort of tells you, hey, this is the right thing to do. Or this is the place, the place to hang out in, you know, that stillness. And then it will just develop. It becomes more quiet. Your mind becomes more blissful, more happy. Like the energetic mind, like I said earlier, is a mind which easily becomes happy. An energetic mind is a mind which easily lets go. You know, an energetic mind can easily accept people around them. You can have more, you know, loving kindness for people. Everybody, really. And, you know, there's this one monk in Thailand, his name is Ajahn Gunha, and he's known for his metta. He's, you know, he just sits down and he's really big, you know. He's really big and he's laughing and he's like very jovial. And all he does, and he's got like a pile of sweets. Big pile of sweets. That's why he's so big, because he's just eating them all the time. And he's, on this side he's got like drinks and more sweets. And then, because I went there once, so I sort of remember where things are. And then behind him, there's like a stick, like a long bamboo stick, right? Long bamboo stick. And it's sort of, he puts on a show for people. And he'll have monks sitting behind him, and he'll have like his translator. And he's one of these monks where people just want to hang around him. Yeah, he's just really easygoing. He gives people attention. He's very wise. And in a sense, he's one of those monks that like to be around people as well. You get monks who don't like to be around people. And that happens as well. So anyway, he would, because he's got so much metta and so much happiness and so much kindness, all he does is when people come, they like get really close, and then he gets the sweets and he just starts throwing at people. And they just laugh like that. And he's like, just keeps on throwing. But he doesn't really care how he throws it. It's like, he gets a handful and he just throws it. And you know, some people, they can't catch really well. So they go like this. And you get boom, 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 get hit by the sweets in the face. So yeah, it's like a big comedy show when that happens. So he gets everybody laughing and happy. And then he'll start, you know, people come up and they offer him stuff. And they'll do the sadhu thing like Ajahn Brahm does, you know, over the top sadhus. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So, all that lovely energy is like building up, and then he grabs his stick. And then he starts blessing people. And the way he does it is, it's a really long stick. It just really depends on how many people are in the crowd. So if there's like a big crowd, he gets out the really long stick so he can reach the back. So he like starts tapping people on the head, you know, and starts chanting. And then he gets the shorter stick and, you know, does the people close by. And then he gets the shortest one. And then when people calm down, you know, when their minds are open, that's when he starts teaching them Dhamma. And that's what he does. He just does that all day. People come, people go, people come, people go. So, you know, in a, you know, wherever you go, there's different types of teachers that you come across. And some of them you might connect with, some of them you may not. But it doesn't really matter. The main thing is to, you know, you're here to save yourself. Yeah, to do it for yourself, really. And that's, and I think that's a, one of the nicest thing about this path is that you take full responsibility. You know, if you really want to become, you know, enlightened, if you want to end suffering, you have to do it yourself. And that's a beautiful thing. It gives you, you know, when it's working, it gives you like a sense of confidence, you know, a sense of well-being, and that's lovely to have. Just being a person who can walk this world, like having confidence in himself. Not a confidence that comes from being successful or a confidence that comes from being like a person with a big ego, but it's a confidence that comes from being a person who's simple, being a person who, you know, is not really attached to the world. That kind of confidence is the confidence that we're looking for. And it's something that we can use to face this world that we're living in. It's like, you know, it was always, you know, it says in the suttas, like the monk who is attained is a monk who walks this world peacefully without being disturbed. So he can walk into, you know, he can walk into the city and there's so many people around, but his mind is still peaceful and not disturbed. You know, he can walk into a bar fight and bottles are being thrown everywhere, but his mind is not disturbed. So that's where we want to get to, and that's, you know, that's the reason why we're here. Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's time to finish up. If anybody's got any questions, they can ask. If not, don't need to ask any questions. If you want to come out and have a chat with me, I'll just.
I was just going to say to you the other thing that I got. Sorry, was someone asking a question?
No.
Okay. I'll give you feedback then. When you talked about shaving the head and the eyebrows,
yeah.
So what came up for me after that for about hours?
Yeah.
I'm never going to get rid of vanity in this lifetime. It's over. That is it. It's fine if you look like a Balenciaga campaign poster boy, you know, like there's a whole look going on there. But it's like, there's just no way I'm going to be able to actually ever get rid of the vanity. That is it, I'm done. Like, you know, I can meditate all I like. It's, you know, it's
yeah.
Over.
Okay.
But it was really interesting because then I started going through this whole thing. It started getting like, mine just went on to this whole other thing. It's like, you know, this whole campaign of like, hey, we could actually then get the whole spiritual thing movement and then maybe raise money for the thing. I just went into this whole story.
Okay. I think we'll finish now. Yep, we'll finish. If you want to, I'll be here for a little while. If you want to come up and say something, then you can.
Give you a metta.
Huh? Not metta, I don't have. There you go. Maybe I'm not a very good chanter. You want me to do some chanting? No. Yes? No? Okay, I'll give you a short blessing. I'll give you the same one that I did at lunchtime yesterday. tu sabba mangalang rakhantu sabba devata sabba buddha nuva vena sada soti bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangalang rakhantu sabba devata sabba dhamma nubhavena sada soti bhavantu te bhavatu sabba mangalang rakhantu sabba devata sabba sanghanu bhavena sada soti bhavantu te. There you go. There you go. Free of charge. You can't ask for your money back. Because, yeah. No worries. See you next time. It's good enough.